Hello, we've split this latest conversation here on the Mole Valley Farmers Podcast into two roughly half-hour episodes, with experts from Mole Valley and Nucamil, the world's first milk replacer producer. We're discussing how to select the best milk replacer for your calves, discovering the telltale feed ingredients to avoid if you want to maximise calf growth and development, and hear about the best management practices to ensure optimal outcomes for your young stock. This is gold standard advice, so keep listening if you want to get into this subject in more detail. That's coming right up on the Mole Valley Farmers Podcast.
This should be a really interesting conversation today. I'm delighted to have Jan, Drew and Charlotte in our virtual studio to discuss this topic. Let's have some introductions though, first of all, starting with Jan.
Hi there, my name is Jan Druijts. I'm Belgium, CEO of Nucamil since 91, working in agriculture business for over 30 years. And actually, it's part of my family history, because my family is for generations in agriculture. And I kind of rolled into the Nucamil activity in those years as a nutritionist. So I have a nutritional technical background. And finally, we were happy that we even could acquire the business, coming from a big dairy processor in the Netherlands, Campina, in the early years 2000. And we have a European and actually worldwide operating business.
Fantastic. Welcome along, Jan. And just tell us, where are you actually today? Where are we speaking to you?
I'm in Belgium at the moment. I'm actually even at home talking to you from my home place, which is actually in the northeast of Belgium. And it's kind of a good start, because it's also the place where the Belgium veal industry, so the real calf business that we know is very known in Europe, is born.
Great. Thank you very much, Jan. And let's go to your colleague at Nucamil, Drew. Just tell us about yourself.
Hello. I'm Drew Coppinger. I've been working for Nucamil now for 2 years. And I'm the young stock specialist in the UK and Ireland, and oversee and manage our core business. My background is pretty much nutrition and calves, with a little bit of integration, but everything I do in day-to-day life and my previous history is all to do with calves. I've been with Nucamil now 2 years, taking us on a sort of a growth journey, which was sort of needed a bit more focus on the UK and Irish markets because of how much our business has grown. My day-to-day work is sort of supporting Mole Valley, their sales guys, working on R&D projects, and working with farmers, to ensure they get the best results from our products.
And you're a little bit closer to home than Drew, I take it.
Yeah, I am currently in the UK, but at the moment I'm spending quite a lot of time abroad, back at the factory. But at this current moment in time, I'm back in the UK.
Hi, Seth. Yeah, so I'm Charlotte Hodgson. I am one of the senior product managers here at Mole Valley Farmers. So I look after, among a few other things, milk replacers, obviously, which is why we're here today, but also on the livestock medicine side as well. So I've actually been with the business now for about 13 years. So I've done a little bit all the way through, working with farmers at the front end, right through now to my current role in the procurement team, just to ensure that we're working with the right suppliers and bringing the right products forward to our customers to ensure that their farms and their enterprises are as successful and profitable and sustainable as possible.
And you've helped guide us on a few podcasts, but this is your first appearance.
Yes, it is my debut, Seth. So yes, looking forward to today's conversation. So it's really interesting.
Excellent. We're all looking forward to this. So let's get straight into this. Jan, you've obviously got the experience. There's no doubt about that. What can you tell us then about the history of calf milk replacers?
Well, Yeah, the history of the calf milk replacers actually started back in 1954. That is actually the birthday year when the concept originally was found. And that was actually done by our mother company in those days called Wessanen. Wessanen is still an active company in the Netherlands, but not anymore in this business. But they were a very creative company. And the bright idea in those days was, first of all, and that's still the case today, the Holstein bull calf is, especially in those days, kind of a waste product, you know, doesn't produce any milk. And yeah, we needed a purpose to bring also value to the farmer. And on the other side, we had whey. Like today, but in those days, whey, the byproduct from the cheese production, was really a waste product. People probably remember it went into the rivers, it was went into the ocean, spread over the land, because there was really no added value, or there was no purpose to use the whey, because the product was, of course, making cheese. Now, the idea was, if we combine both, whey, let's say, reconstituted in a product, and we have the bull calves, we could produce veal, so a high quality and high-end type of meat, actually with quite a lot of health-related properties, of which one, for instance, cholesterol levels is an important one. And it became a popular product, I would say, in particularly in the Mediterranean cuisine, I can say. If you look to Italy, Spain, the whole Mediterranean area, let's say, the product has the highest consumption and is still up to date a successful product and has created really a lot of value to the farmer. Because if you for a minute compare that with outside Europe situation, there the value isn't there, of course. And so this helped the European farmer in a way to create or to add value on the farm. Having said so, of course, also in those days, using a milk replacer, as the name says, replacing milk, had also, of course, an important economical purpose. So the idea was to have a product as an alternative to whole milk going to the processor, in order to have an economical substitute for the whole milk that the farmer is or his cows are producing. Now, that was back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, this developed like that. After that came, some of them will remember, but we had the European agriculture policy, having milk powder mountains, having butter mountains, of everything, there was too much, and so on. So the business was quite restricted. But then, if you go somewhere in the 90s, when there came really a genetic boost, you could say. So the Holstein race from an average performer became really, as we know it today, a top performer. I say basically our dairy cow today runs a marathon daily. So the requirements started to change completely. And then the milk replacer business had to basically reinvent itself from having a economical alternative to milk, which was used when it fitted. It became really part of farm management today to feed that Holstein that is going to produce this 10,000 liters of milk in his first, second, third lactation, let's say. And we needed to design the right nutrition, which is actually the situation we are in today.
Thanks very much, Jan. That's a good history of how this has developed. And there may well be an answer within that for my next question towards Charlotte. Charlotte, why then would you feed a calf milk replacer instead of using whole milk?
So I think first up, it's really important to recognise that that early calf nutrition period is really a key and a golden opportunity to set that calf up and maximise its lifetime performance potential. We've got some really strong feed conversion rates in there as well, and we want to make sure that the nutrition that we're giving and really the whole calf rearing protocols are set up in the best way possible so we can maximise that calf's potential, as I said. As Jan has hit on as well, the reason why we had calf milk replacer in the first place is because milk obviously is valuable. It has a value. We've seen farm gate milk prices certainly creeping up over the last number of months, which is promising and pleasing, as we all need it to be. But clearly there are some pressures on farm in terms of input costs and looking towards using whole milk feeding sometimes where it's milk that isn't unsaleable. It can provide a nice useful outlet. But there are some compromises that we will be making if we're looking at feeding whole milk. Whilst it can supply quite high levels of energy and protein, actually that's hugely variable throughout the seasons, and we really need to make sure we are feeding calves really consistently as well all the way through. There are some risks as well around bacterial counts and disease transmission as well. It's something that we need to be really mindful of. Clear these young animals, we don't really want to be exposing them to any pathogens which may well cause some disease, knock back their performance or even worse than that. So it's something that is really important that we take into account. Thinking again about the makeup of whole milk as well, we mentioned that there was some variability in terms of the consistency with regards to fat and protein, but it can also be quite low in vitamins and minerals as well, which we all know are important building blocks in terms of nutrition as well. It can also have an effect where it is delaying the intake of starter feed. It's really important that we get calves onto starter feed as soon as possible so we can encourage that rumen development as well. And where calves are fed whole milk or milk with really high fat content as well, it can just delay that desire for them to go and start exploring and nibbling away at that calf creep, which we really need them to be doing in order to continue their development.
Yeah, absolutely so.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation. If you're new to the podcast, can I encourage you to hit subscribe wherever you're listening, as we bring you guests who provide lots of useful farming information and new ways of working to make better use of your time. But for now, let's get back to the chat.
Drew, I mean, obviously we're saying feeding calves whole milk can provide a useful solution for what to do with that unsaleable milk, but are there any precautions really that farmers should be taking?
Charlotte briefly touched on it then, really. often, you know, we can find that it's lower in vitamins and minerals, so some farmers do decide to mix with a suitable milk replacer. Obviously, it's viewed often that waste milk, from the dairy farm, oh, it's there, it's free, or it's cheap. In effect, it's cheaper than making milk powder, which can be correct. But I think there are a few real key areas that you have to be so mindful of. And that's all to do with sort of disease prevention and disease transfer to the calf. You know, waste milk does have a risk of containing antibiotic traces. If it's antibiotic waste milk, then obviously that can increase antibiotic resistance within your herd. I think you've got to be really mindful of sort of three key diseases, BVD, mycoplasma, and Yonce. Now, obviously, it does depend if the herd is high health or not. But as we know, there's sort of a varying sort of health status of herds within the UK. And I know a lot of farmers are doing a lot of work on it. But I think the risk of disease transfer is most certainly higher when using sort of unsaleable milk or antibiotic milk or dumped milk, however, you know, people want to describe it. So a few key things really we say is only use whole milk from cows that are healthy and disease free. Obviously every farmer knows and understands the profile of his herd. So yeah, that's something that only they will know. But again, you know, the hygiene piece is completely, you know, is so essential because the bacteria, not just within the milk, but obviously within the utensils used, the buckets, the whisks, you know, if the dump milk's been sat there just in the parlour, you know, we do know the bacteria can double every 20 minutes. So it's pretty key, you know, if you are a healthy herd, high health and free of disease, then if you do decide to go down this route, just feed it quickly. It gives them a lot less time for bacteria to multiply. Cleaning, disinfect all your kit thoroughly, and avoid any fecal contamination, you know, by using closed containers. Often, you know, these can be areas with sort of high bacterial count. We always say do not store warm milk for longer than 24 hours as well. And often, you know, pasteurize where possible. I think that's a key thing as well. But we would always advise that waste milk treated with antibiotics should not be fed to calves. We do. That's a key point. You know, it will, in the end, sort of increase antibiotic resistance within the herd. So that's something that we strongly advise against. And they're sort of the key areas, really. Say the key area is health within your herd. And if you are going to do it, the standards have to be very, very high. To ensure that you're using sterilized equipment and just decrease that bacterial load going into the calf to reduce disease transfer.
I think just to follow on from what Drew's saying as well is that feeding surplus whole milk can seem like a pretty easy solution, but actually there's a lot of things that we've got to consider and be particularly mindful of if that's a route that we're going to go down. It's not to say that it's the wrong thing to do, and some farms do absolutely do it successfully, but it needs a lot of care and attention, and it can be quite intensive in terms of making sure your hygiene is right, you're feeding that within that window to make sure we're not getting that disease transfer, everything else as well. And I think where milk replacers come in, of course, that as Jan has mentioned, it was originally brought in so that we could be putting more milk in the tank and feeding the calf something else. But actually, it does provide a really consistent source of nutrition for that calf, which is really important. Back to the point I was making at the beginning.
Just to add also to Drew's words, that there was very recently published a study about antibiotic resistance in the European Union, whereby it was very clear that in most dairy farms, this really starts at with the calves. So we are still using too much of antibiotics, and through the milk it can definitely create a lot of resistance. So in order to prevent problems today, but especially tomorrow, this is definitely not advisable. And having said so, there's another point in this is that, of course, many people say, modern nature has developed the best product. And indeed, and it's true, milk is an unbelievable complex molecule, both on the protein as on the fat side, that we like to underline. But the genetic modifications that have been done with our calves and cows, let's say producing maybe 2,000 years ago 1,000, 2,000 liters, and today 10,000 liter, has modified our animals. We have to recognize that as well, meaning the milk and the milk that's been produced, composition is also not anymore what it used to be. And nutrition is all about fine-tuning what the needs of the calf of today is. And that is on the protein and the energy part, very, very crucial. And that's basically the job we are doing day by day, to make sure that we get the exact nutrition that the animal needs. The calf is designed, and you see it in the other industries, and look to the broiler industry, in the pig industry. It's exactly the same thing with the animals, the production animals we have today. They have very specific nutritional and other requirements.
Yes, good points there, Jan. Drew, so if we're choosing a calf milk replacer, where would you say we should start?
That question could go on for the whole podcast. It's a really challenging one because I think the milk powder space is so busy. I actually think, you know, you start looking for a product or a powder and sometimes people just get completely lost. You know, in the marketplace, there's potentially over 100 options, all with different makeup, different nutrient levels, different fat and protein levels, fiber, etc. So it's a really tricky one, but we sort of go on a journey with a farmer. And when we start, you know, to before we even look at milk replacers, we need to have a really study of the system. You know, we've got variant systems, we've got grazing-based systems, we've got high-yielding Holstein systems, we've obviously got beef systems, both continental and native. So there's a variety of systems as well. We need to look at the farmer's goals within that system once we've established, you know, what does the farmer want to achieve? Is it sort of serving heifers at a certain age? Is it, you know, weight gain per day on beef calves? There's so many goals and varying goals that farmers want to achieve. But in reality, you know, we can't just go into a farmer and say, look, this is, we think, the best milk powder. Use this and everything will be fine. And that's why we sort of go on a journey and on a slightly different approach, whereby, you know, we'll go out to the farm, we'll work with the farmer. And we like to put products on farm where, you know, we've had some influence in the management and maybe some of the decisions because, you know, we can't just give a milk powder and say, this is the silver bullet now, everything will be fine. We need to look at the whole system. So we generally start with the colostrum management. For me, it's the most key part of rearing calves. Without that part, it's a real challenge. So, you know, ensuring that colostrum is administered properly and of the correct quality and within the correct timescales is the first stage for success. After that part, you know, we'll have a look at potentially the sheds, the setup, how things are disinfected, the feeding sort of kit, how the calves are going to be fed, whether there's sort of things in place to make sure that's disinfected properly and we're not getting sort of, you know, just buckets left on gates. And at the end of the day, you know, they might be washed once a week. When we're looking in the shed as well, you know, we can look at the airflow and see sort of, you know, how that can sort of contribute or impact calf health. Because we, as we know, you know, incorrect airflow can be a, you know, quite a significant cause of pneumonia. You know, we want calves to grow and we don't want calves cold. We don't want calves using energy just to stay warm. You know, we want a surplus of energy for calves to grow and thrive. There's been a lot of work done on stocking density, and I think that's really a key part as well. You know, we can look at feeding systems. With regards to stocking density, if we look at automatic feeders and say there's far too many calves in the pen, then you're going to have an issue with, you know, intakes. But also, if you've got too many calves in the pen, you're obviously going to have increased chances of disease. We look at the quarantine protocols because, you know, if you get a sick calf within a pen, a lot of these diseases can transfer from calf to calf, and it's really important that, you know, we look at that and can sort of identify that calf, remove that calf straight away, so that the infection sort of doesn't pass through the group. You know, another key part that we look at, you know, we can give the product, but unless the product's prepared properly on farm, you know, it can it can bring a lot of issues. You know, if you mix it too cold, certain ingredients don't like that. If you mix it too warm, you will kill some of the IgGs within the product. So milk powder is actually a really sensitive product, and it's key that sort of the milk is prepared the same every day of the year. And it's just that consistency piece. You know, calves, for me and what I do and how I sort of manage the farms I look after, consistency and protocols are the absolute key here. And if you can do the same every day of the year and do it properly, it does make life a lot easier. You know, not just the sort of age-old saying of, oh yeah, the calves are the last thing we do at night, and we do it after milking in the morning. You know, these calves are extremely valuable nowadays, and you know, they really do require some sort of correct management. So we go on a journey with a farmer. Sometimes this can take time. You know, it's not an overnight thing. We can just go, look, do this, 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 and this, and then it'll all be fine. We just work on a, you know, we work on a project, you know, with the farmer, and to in the end achieve the results we need. And then after we've sort of looked at all that, we've got the basics right. You know, we've given advice, we've worked away together. You know, we need to look at the performance targets, and then start looking at products which I think, you know, well, the sort of the sales team from Mole Valley, we work together, which we think are going to work to the best ability on this farm to achieve the farmer's goals, whether that be whey, skim, high protein, you know, there's so many different products, and I think every farm can be quite specific to a variety of products and formulas that I believe will achieve the results the farmers need.
If you've liked what you've heard so far, we're getting even more into the detail in the next episode. Here's a sneak peek.
We all know what heat can do on a protein. If you bake your eggs in the morning, you take your full English, then you know what it does with the protein, with the proteins in the pan. So the same is happening with the proteins coming from milk. It changes completely the constitutions.
The devil is in the detail. There's a lot more to it than perhaps you would think of just looking at the label. It seems like relatively simple stuff, but actually it's hugely complex. And that's why Bleaswell Valley would be wanting to work with manufacturers like Jan and the team at Newcomel, who are really all over that detail, really truly understand and the makeup of the powders and can ensure that whatever is being produced is something that is of the highest quality and is going to deliver the performance results that we need.
We are here to go on a journey of development, you know, to ensure that we can get to the end goal. So we don't just come and sell a product and then walk away. You know, there's a whole team of people and myself to, you know, work along the journey with you.
Part two of this conversation is available now. Just keep listening here on the Mole Valley Farmers Podcast.